Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. Before we get into sleep, which is obviously so incredibly important, and it sets our foundation for our entire day with how our brain is going to work, with how we're going to feel within our body, but our feet are also our foundation to help us feel better from our ankles, our knees, our hips, our low back. It all plays a role up the chain based on how we're moving down at our feet. And traditionally, we've been told we need more structure, we need more arch support, we need more on our feet to help support it. But the reality is we need more mobility, we need more strength, we need more control, feedback, and feeling within our feet to be able to play a role up the chain of our body. And this is what Vivo Barefoot Shoes does. This is why we talk about it. This is why we've been wearing them for, 5 years now, I think. This is why our little boy is wearing them, because we trust them. We trust what they're doing for your feet, because we are taking away the structure. One of the number one questions I get asked all the time is, what shoe should I start with Vivo Barefoot? The reality is they are all barefoot type shoes. They're going to have a wide toe area, not just toe box, but the natural toe area for your big toe and little toe to actually spread the way that it's supposed to. This spread allows for increased activation at the bottom of your foot to help improve that strength and stability. Without that spread of the toes, without that mobility of the foot, we lose the strength and stability. And this is why getting yourself in Vivo Barefoot shoes is so important. So you can use code TOB at checkout. That's going to get you 15% off any pair that's not already discounted using code TOB at checkout. We're going to have it linked up in the show notes, or go to vivobarefoot.com/the-optimal-body. That's the optimal body for Vivo Barefoot shoes. You're going to see our code directly on our page so you don't forget to use it at checkout, but snag yourself either a new pair of shoes or another pair of shoes, whether it's hiking and getting out for the beautiful weather that's coming up. Quick update before you go. There has been a code update. So you can actually get 20% off only now through July 1st. So you got to get on this now. 20% off any Vivo Barefoot shoes that are not already discounted using code TOB20. So get on it.
Our next guest, Devin Burke, is recognized as one of the top 10 coaches of 2023 in the United States, is a TEDx speaker, best-selling author, renowned sleep coach, and is the founder of the Sleep Science Academy. His company is dedicated to helping people stop suffering and start sleeping using a unique holistic approach called dynamic sleep recalibrating. Additionally, Devin has earned recognition as one of the top 25 health coaches in America out of over 100,000 plus other coaches for his innovative methods and results. Devin is on a mission to help the 40 million people who suffer from poor sleep by sharing the tools and techniques they need to stop suffering and start sleeping as quickly as possible. He helps people learn how optimizing sleep is truly the missing link to unlocking the incredible potential of their bodies and their minds. Devin firmly believes that providing our bodies with the right conditions enables healing, and he advocates that small, consistent choices yield substantial, enduring results. He is also the author of The Sleep Advantage, a book that isn't just about sleep, but a roadmap for generating effortless energy to live with more passion, power, and presence. I know this interview is going to help a lot of people, so let's get into it.
Devin, thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us about sleep. This is a really big topic, and I honestly don't think we've had anyone specifically, like people say, oh yeah, you need to get sleep, but like, what does that mean and how does that look? Because it impacts so many people who cannot get good sleep or feel rested the next day. So I'm really excited for this.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks so much for having me on.
And I think the crazy thing is, I mean, when we talk about any aspect of health, sleep comes up as something that is of vital importance for optimization in almost any area of health. So what initially attracted you to the field of optimization of sleep? Were you someone who had sleep issues yourself or just interested in the area of study?
Yeah. So funny enough, I'm actually an incredible sleeper.
Oh.
Like my family used to kid around and call me narco, short for narcoleptic, because I could literally sleep anywhere. And I didn't realize how much of a gift that was until I started to study sleep and realized how big of an issue it is for so many people and how important it is for every aspect of our health and our life, really.
Okay, interrupting really quickly to let you guys in on a little secret, actually. This is very vulnerable for me right now. But we are trying for baby number two.
Yeah, growing the fam.
Which is very exciting. And so I'm back on taking prenatals again and being very consistent with trying to be more conscious and aware of the supplements that I'm putting in my body. And, you know, we actually started looking at this company, Needed. And they have a ton of incredible supplements. And actually, Dom, you're taking some
too. I'm taking them too. They have male prenatal vitamins as well as sperm support. And it's just so important. And we both, obviously, you guys know we focus on what we put in our body and make sure we're using high quality things. And that is why we're so excited about Needed, because they don't use any unnecessary fillers. They use the highest quality and version of the different nutrients in their vitamins. And all of their ingredients are sustainably sourced.
And I made sure I got a sign off from my RD as well.
Yeah.
To make sure, is this going to be the best? Because you guys know, after having a miscarriage, I'm just, and obviously I can't say this is why, but I'm just so conscious and aware of what I put in my body. And I know that Needed has 7 times more choline, which is vital for brain development and metabolism, 6 times more vitamin D3 to support strong immune and bone health, and 20 times more vitamin B6 to enhance energy, mood, and reduce nausea, which is so crucial in those, you know, in that first trimester of pregnancy. So this is why I'm taking their prenatal and other supplements, and I trust their company. And I'm so excited that they are now a sponsor with us.
Yes, all that to be said, we went out and got them as a sponsor. Yes. Because we had been using their supplements for a few months. We absolutely love them. And they are giving 20% off to our audience using code OPTIMAL. You can get 20% off any of their supplements, any of their prenatals for men or for women. So go check out the link down in the show notes. Make sure you use code OPTIMAL at checkout to get that special 20% off. And now we'll head back into the interview.
And so kind of what led me to get into sleep is other people asking me for help. I was working with a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners. Most of them, as you can imagine, don't sleep. They were asking, hey, I don't want to take sleeping medications. I want to get off these medications. Is there anything you can do? Do you know anyone, or is there anything you can do to help? And so that kind of set me on a journey to kind of dive into sleep. And the more I was learning about it, the more interested I got, and the more I realized that there really isn't that many good solutions for people that are truly struggling with falling and staying asleep. And so that kind of set me on this journey, this path to really understand sleep, understand how it impacts our life, how it impacts our health, and really how to give people the tools that they're missing to naturally restore their ability to sleep.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. And it's so funny that you say that you can sleep anywhere. I mean, I feel like I'm married to that. And I've heard from a lot of women as well, where you're like, I lay down and my mind just goes a million miles, but yet my husband's head hits the pillow and they're out.
I think it's maybe an issue for me on the other end, where I fall asleep too easily in some places that I probably shouldn't. And, but, you know, whole different discussion of topic. She struggles to wake me up sometimes, you know, that type of thing. I'm sleeping so soundly that she has to like kick me in the ribs to get me out of bed.
I think a lot of people wish that they had that issue.
Yeah.
So, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, everybody sleeps. Most people don't sleep well. And the people that do sleep really well, it truly is a superpower and it is a gift. And it can be quite annoying for bed partners when one of their bed partner is like just the soundest sleeper and they're up all night, you know, trying to figure out how to fall asleep or stay asleep. And that comes up actually a lot in our coaching is, you know, my husband, you know, he sleeps so peacefully and I'm up and I just look at him and I wish I could just be like that or her. And it's kind of interesting. Yeah. So, but I'm sure we'll get into some of how to overcome some of that in this conversation.
Exactly. So first of all, like, what exactly qualifies insomnia? Like, if you're having trouble sleeping, at what point is it that I have insomnia, or I'm just having, you know, some difficulty in this moment? Like, how does one develop, you know, having insomnia? Is this something that happens over time? Is it just come on? Like, Can you explain it a little bit more?
Yeah, and I really appreciate the question because a lot of people actually have insomnia and they don't even realize it. Mm-hmm. And there's different classifications. So as far as duration goes, everyone at some point in their life experienced some type of insomnia. Usually it doesn't become acute or chronic. And so transient insomnia is a couple of nights. You know, you're having issues a couple of nights. Maybe you're going through stressful times. Someone in your life has passed away. It's a couple of nights where your sleep gets thrown off and then it gets restabilized. And then if that pattern continues for a couple of weeks, then that's considered acute insomnia. And then if it continues past 3 months, then it's considered chronic insomnia. So those are sort of the three different classifications of duration of time. And then there's different types of insomnia. So some people have trouble falling asleep. That's called onset insomnia. Some people have trouble staying asleep, which is called maintenance insomnia. And some people have both. So it kind of goes, and it can come in waves for some people. So some people, you know, at first it kind of presents itself as trouble falling asleep. Then it kind of switches to trouble staying asleep. So it kind of, and how it happens, it can happen for a number of reasons. Like I said, it could be a stressful event in someone's life. It could be a reaction to a medication. It could be another health condition that's going on, underlying health condition. Often it's stress and anxiety. Mm. It's people that don't understand how to really process emotion or understand how to, you know, allow the body to express itself in a way that's healthy. That suppression can then create tension and pressure and lead to insomnia. So there's a lot of ways in which people, you know, become insomniacs. But the good news is really the way to solve it is the same. Mm. Does that clarify the different classifications and sort of how someone can fall into those different buckets?
Absolutely. I mean, I really think you kind of unfolded the Pandora's box of insomnia because it's just this term that everyone will throw out, like, I'm an insomniac or I have insomnia. And really the different classifications, the time determinant classifications, whether it's, you know, acute or a more chronic or persistent condition, and the trouble is falling asleep versus trouble staying asleep. I think that's really important to know. Mm-hmm. I think another important thing to explain a little bit more of is, like, our brain should be doing some pretty specific things when we're winding down for sleep. And I think that this is where, when we're trying to address the root cause of insomnia, and if I say anything wrong, you can, of course, tell me, no, you're full of it or you're just making this up, but... when we're trying to address the root cause, I'm guessing we're trying to address a little bit of what the brain is doing in these moments of having difficulties going to sleep or difficulties staying asleep. Could you explain a little bit of what our brain should be doing as we're gearing up for a good restful night's sleep?
Yeah, it's really the brain and the body. And I always tell our clients, you know, a great night of sleep actually starts as soon as you wake up, because literally everything throughout the entire day, what you do, what you decide not to do, dictates, kind of sets your body and mind up for a nice, peaceful, relaxing sleep, or one that's full of tossing and turning, frustration, fitful sleep. And so, you know, throughout the day, I give this a balloon analogy where our bodies are constantly being filled up with air, and that air is pressure, tension, or some people can call it stress. And it's not necessarily always from negative sources. You could be really excited about something you're working on. You could just be having a lot going on in your life that's amazing, but it takes attention, it takes focus, it takes energy. And if we don't offset that balloon, if we don't let a little air out of that balloon throughout the day, then the balloon is so filled up of air that it creates strange things like a racing mind. It creates tension and pressure in the body. It creates tightness, constriction, contraction, hyperarousal, this sort of sense that something's not right. And what that causes is then the body having a hard time doing the most natural thing in the entire world, which is falling asleep. I mean, it's so natural. We were born to sleep. You don't have to think about it. Just like your heart beats, you don't have to think about that. Your hair grows, your nails grow, you don't have to think about that. It just happens. Sleep's the same way. So if it's not happening, there's something in how we're thinking or how we're behaving, or usually both, that is keeping the body in this sort of hyper aroused loop that then keeps the mind from being, you know, being able to just sort of let go and let sleep happen, or not. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm. And what is, you know, kind of the biggest mistake you feel like people are making to fix this and just be able to get to sleep?
Yeah, there's really three big ones. Mm. The first one is people try to force and control sleep. And sleep, it's not something you can control or force. And so it gets a little bit tricky because you'll hear a lot of people say, hey, let's clean up your sleep hygiene. Let's put in, you know, place routine or get you on some good supplements or do anything to kind of set sleep up. And what can happen is people sort of put all this pressure on sleep. They put it on a pedestal and they see it as a problem. And it's not a problem, it's a result. And then people do things so that they sleep. And if you're doing anything to sleep, there's this expectation of I'm going to do this and then I'm going to sleep. And that's a subtle way of trying to force control something we have no control of. And it can be a little bit tricky because there is a fine line between, hey, let's have some healthy behaviors around, you know, technology and let's, you know, separate our day from our night so that we're not carrying all that stuff into bed with us. But what I found, at least in the work that I do, is a lot of people, they're trying to sleep. And sleep is something that happens. You can't really, you know, trying to sleep is actually the last thing you want to do. You want to let sleep happen. And it kind of sounds like a semantic sort of flip, but it really is helpful for people to get that and understand it because it just allows the body to get into a state where sleep can happen. I'm not sure if I explained that clear, but hopefully that makes sense.
I mean, that sounds like taking off some of the pressure that you talked about before, you know, letting some of that air out rather than building upon it and putting the pressure even more so of trying to force something that's already not happening.
I think it's important, like you mentioned, sleep hygiene isn't done in order so you can go to sleep at 10 p.m. every night. It's something that you need to have a little more caution around the expectations that come with setting up the routine or doing some of those behaviors that you mentioned that could
happen
help
throughout the day.
Could help sleep happen.
100%. I love the language that you're using because it's really important to kind of frame it like that. The other mistake kind of leads me right into it. It's spending too much time in bed. So, and this is really paradoxical. It's very counterintuitive. Most people think, well, if I'm not sleeping well, I should spend more time in bed. And you really should be doing the exact opposite of that. And the reason for that is that if you're in bed and you're not sleeping, then you're anchoring the bed with either frustration or tossing and turning or fitful sleep or a racing mind or anxiety or whatever you want to call it. And that's the last thing we want to do is anchor our bed with some type of racing mind, racing heart, tossing or turning, frustration, anger. So if you actually spend less time in bed, what that does is it's going to increase your sleep efficiency, which is your time in bed asleep, and it'll allow your body to then get the sleep. Most people think, well, if I'm not in bed, well, then there's no chance I'm going to be able to sleep. And again, it makes logical sense, like that's true. And what I found that when people spend less time in bed and they do it in the right way, it actually then helps them sleep more when they're in bed. And there's some nuance there and there's some strategy involved in what I just said, but it makes a huge, huge difference when people execute that strategy correctly.
I mean, it makes sense to me, especially Dom will get mad at me too if I, you know, just want to do a little work in bed. It's like, again, that association of what I'm doing in bed and what that that's setting up for me mentally as well, rather than just being the place that I sleep.
Well, and I'm
exactly.
I'm not innocent either. I'm on my phone almost every night in bed. Like, and that, I mean, that brings up an important question. All of this stuff around sleep hygiene, and you even mentioned it, cleaning up screen use. Like, what, when it comes to screens, is your recommendations in order to set up healthy habits around our sleep?
Yeah, this is a really interesting question because a lot of times people think, well, it's the blue light from these devices that's blocking the melatonin faucet that's creating this. But it's actually, I found it something different. It's actually the hyper arousal. So it's like when we're on our phone, what are we doing? We're either on social media, we're checking emails, we're checking our text messages, we're doing something that kind of gets the mind active. Mm-hmm. And that's the last thing that we want to do in bed, not to mention we are getting that blue light, which does affect melatonin. But yeah, I mean, these devices, they are the worst bed partners. They really are. TV or a phone is the worst bed partner. If people would just draw strong boundaries around their technology, their sleep would 100% improve. And I get it. It's difficult because these things are addicting. I mean, yeah, the shows are so darn good. Right? You know, you're watching Yellowstone, you're like, oh, I just want to watch the next episode in bed or whatever it is.
Right.
Or, you know, your phone's right next to your bed and you're like, oh, I'm just going to pick it up. And then the next thing you know, you're going down a rabbit hole.
I gotta watch Stephen Colbert's monologue though. That's
exactly.
That's when I catch it right before I go to bed.
It's just not good. And then that becomes a behavior pattern. And it really, it's so common. And yeah, people have a really hard time drawing boundary around it. So I'm not here to, you know, tell you really what to do, but what I can say is that if you do draw strong boundaries, like for me, I'll just kind of tell you how I do it. I put my phone in the bathroom. So it's plugged in, it's in the bathroom, and I just have an old fashioned clock by my bed, and that works. I mean, it took me some time actually to get to that place. Like, you know, I used to use my phone as an alarm clock, and then it's there, and then you pick it up, and it's really, really hard to draw these boundaries, but when you do, it's so worth it. It really is.
So what about in like emergency situations? Like that's where my brain goes. Well, if a family member calls in the middle of the night, which has happened, and I've had to get up and I've answered the phone, luckily, because it's right by my bed. So now I'm even more hyper aware that I don't want my phone to be away from me in an emergency situation. So But maybe that's it's great, even
yeah,
like...
Yeah, no, for sure. In that instance, I would say actually keep your phone by your bed, honestly, because if it's going to be more, if it's going to create more stress for you, like, oh, I'm not going to get the call or I'm not going to wake up if you have like a sick parent or whatever it is, then in those cases, I would say, yeah, then have the phone. And then once that situation is stabilized or there's a transition that happens or whatever it is, then at that point, I would say, okay, it's time to sort of, you know... get the phone away from the bed.
Yeah.
Does that make that would be my recommendation.
No, that makes sense and that's fair. I haven't done it yet, but that makes sense.
And I think the next layer of that is, you know, you hear different people saying, oh, 2 hours, 3 hours before bed. I mean, is there any sweet spot? I know you said you're not going to tell us exactly what to do when it comes to phone use and whatnot, but is there a sweet spot if you're really wanting to calm down the stress signals, any negative impacts on sleep that might come from technology use? Should we be trying to cease use a couple hours before bed? Does that matter as much?
I mean, yeah, that would be ideal for sure. One of my mentors shared this strategy with me, and I like to share it. It's like 3-2-1 sleep. So it's like 3 hours before bed, you don't eat. 2 hours before bed, no work. And then 1 hour before bed or more, no technology use. And I think it really depends on several factors. It depends on like what type of content are you consuming as well? Like what type of content are you consuming with your technology? Like people that watch the news late at night, that is the worst content to watch. Like if you're going to watch the news, catch the news like earlier on in the day, not later on in the day. Because it's just all negative. It's all stressful. It's like you're hearing about bridge collapsing and you're hearing about, you know, World War III and all this stuff. And it's like, oh my God, of course we're not going to be able to sleep. So if the bigger buffer you can have, I would say create whatever buffer can work for you. But the bigger buffer you can have between your technology use and your actual, you know, bedtime is going to be beneficial. But that's going to, depending on your life situation, do you have kids? Do you have a sick parent? Do you have, you know, is your job, what is your job like? I mean, there's so many factors there, but I would say as much as you can distance your technology use from the time you actually want to be asleep, it's going to have a positive impact the bigger that gap is on your sleep.
Yeah. Now, I really appreciate that you know, kind of highlight too how you talk about it's from the moment you wake up and what you're doing throughout the day, not just, you know, your screen time or things that happen right before bed. And I think that's really important for people to be mindful of. And that's something as parents now that we've had to understand as well. It's, well, the more active and, you know, kind of allowing the kid to play and get sunlight and do different things, the more tired they're going to be at the end of the day. And the more, you know, so you're really taking in.
And the better he naps, which he's napping right now. Right. So pray to God he stays asleep while we chat.
But all of these factors really play a role. So what does that look like then during the day to help set your mind and your body up to be better, you know, when it comes to sleep?
Well, you really, what you just said, I mean, be like a kid,
yeah.
You know, get sun, you know, play, like, do, like, really, I mean, it sounds, and people are like, well, I don't have time for that. It's like, okay, well, I mean, there's an impact, maybe not every day or every week, but every little thing you can do to get more connected to nature. And in nature, you know, we're outside, right? We're getting sun on our skin. We're seeing the sunrise. We're seeing the sunset. We're breathing fresh air. You look in the natural world, animals play, right? Mm-hmm. Why do they do that? There's that, like, from an evolutionary standpoint, that would be something that doesn't really make sense. If animals are playing, they're more vulnerable to being killed, but there's a reason why they play. And it's because it's fun. It relieves mm-hmm. stress, right? There's some time where their animals are not just looking for food or, you know, trying to avoid predators. So honestly, just looking at nature, you can learn so much. And if we can become more in tune with our natural biorhythms by being more connected to nature, being outside, getting sun, you know, not going from one thing to the next, we call it at Sleep Science Academy, we call it nexting. It's like, we just like go from the time we wake up, we're all day long, it's just like filled with like nexting, like we're working and then we're eating and then we're back to work and then we're dealing with something else. And then, so if you can create some intentional space, and it doesn't have to be a lot, it could be 5 minutes in between your tasks, where maybe you go outside, you get some sunlight, you breathe, you know, you do something that's fun, that doesn't involve technology, that, you know, there's some interaction, some type of connection with your community or the people in your home, that makes a huge, huge difference. Those are the things that are letting the air out of the balloon. And then simple things like starting your day with caffeine. Most people, they wake up, they drink their coffee right away. Cortisol's highest in the morning. That's the stress hormone. And then essentially what caffeine does is it's like dumping gasoline on a fire. And now your cortisol's elevated the rest of the day. So, you know, like wait an hour. Mm. You wait an hour before you have that cup of coffee. Have a big glass of water. Start your day slower. You know, get up a little bit earlier so that you can start your day slower. And that'll have an impact on how the rest of your day goes. These are all little strategies, little tools, a little ways of sort of operating throughout the day that then set the body up for, again, the most natural thing in the world, sleep. It's so natural. If we're not sleeping, all that means is that something is out of balance in either how we're behaving or maybe. And that's affecting our body, which then has the result of sleep not happening. That's it. It's not a problem. It's a result. It's like, okay, what is the, you know, what's the cause that's leading to the effect of one of the most natural things in the world not happening?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the question I always ask. And I ask everyone to really ask that question themselves if they're struggling with their sleep. And if you really take the time to think about it, like, it's amazing the type of answers that come up. It's like, oh, wow, like I need more connection in my life. Oh, wow, I am, you know, super stressed about this thing. Or, wow, I haven't drawn these boundaries with my technology. Like, so there's small things, but these small things throughout the day add up to be big things.
Yeah. And I can't imagine some of the realizations that you've had, you know, clients in your Sleep Science Academy come up with. But I appreciate too how you approach it in the way, you know, we'll always have the people who say, oh, I don't have time to do that. I don't have time to go outside. I don't have time to get sunlight in my eyes. I don't have time to stick my feet in the grass. And if we see it as something that needs to be this hour, 2 hour long process, but you gave 3, 4, 5 examples right there that could take less than 60 seconds from your day. And those little micro doses of changes for our brain, our stress system, and our body can be so profound when done consistently. And, you know, it's a positive feedback loop. You do these positive things and it will be get more because you'll start to notice the difference in your brain and body won't be able to ignore it.
Mm-hmm. 100%. I see that all the time. I mean, we really work with the worst of the worst. Like people that have been on all kinds of sleeping medications are getting 2 to 3 hours a night. They're not sleeping. They've tried all the functional doctors and they're like, we're like their last hope. And when I'm not kidding you, when they start to understand how sleep works and they start to understand how their living and thinking impacts their sleep and they make these little micro adjustments, it's like incredible what happens. They shock themselves. And it's not like it's rocket science. It's not like it's these crazy things that we need to implement or do differently. It's just small things. But like you said, done with consistency over time, then create, you know, a big result. And that result means natural sleep.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, consistency is everything we talk about.
It sounds super similar to me with people who we work with who have pain, and you start doing some small things like some breath work and, you know, a couple movements that actually target your main restrictions and the root cause. And it empowers people too. Once they realize that the decisions they make allow them to take responsibility for the positive things they're feeling in their body, it's so much different than taking a sleep medication or taking melatonin or something like that, that you feel like is something external that's going to result in something different. You put the power back in the person's hands, which is pretty great.
Yes. That's so important. And that's actually one of the mistakes that we didn't get to when we were talking about the big, there's three big mistakes. That's the other one. It's people give their power away because they rely on sleeping medication or sleeping aids or whatever it is. And they're relying on something else to put them to sleep. And don't get me wrong, and this is not medical advice, but there's a time and a place for medication. But these sleeping medications were designed to be used very, very temporarily, not for months and years. And the danger is in using something like a sleeping aid is not only doesn't create natural sleep, it sedates you. And there's a difference between real sleep and sedation. But like you said, you're putting your power into something else. You're saying, I need this thing or I won't sleep. And that's just not true. And now you don't have, you have less control because you're relying on something that's outside of yourself.
Right.
So it's very much like what you guys do with helping your clients get out of pain. And if pain is the reason why you're not sleeping, then deal with the pain, right? Like figure out a way of how to, you know, get to the root cause of the pain to get out of pain so that, you know, sleep can happen.
Yeah. Now I want to go into the environment a little bit because I noticed even for myself, being the person that I would look at my husband peacefully sleeping and I'm still trying to figure out how I get to sleep. One thing that made a really huge impact, because we don't have a blacked out room, we don't have blacked out shades, but I got a really comfortable, amazing sleep mask that I love and I rely on heavily, but I black it out and I can sleep. So how much does that impact our sleep, like the environment and the room that we're in?
It does impact your sleep quality drastically. Mm. Now, so really important that people pick that up. Not necessarily the quantity of your sleep, but the quality of your sleep. Because if you're having trouble falling or staying asleep and you're waking up, getting a sleep mask or blackout curtains or all those things, it's not going to really do what's necessary to actually have the result. But if you're sleeping pretty good and you put in place, you know, darkness, the room is cold, it's quiet, you're in a really comfortable bed, you got really nice sheets, you know, it's just like a sacred space. The bedroom is a sacred space. We spend a third of our lives asleep. So like a third of our lives in a bed, right? So make it like a spa. Like I tell people, like make your bedroom, like the colors on the wall, the fabrics on, you know, the quality of your mattress. Like you're spending a third of your life in this room, or a good portion of your life in this room. Make it like the best room in your house. Like really invest in high quality stuff, as much, you know, whatever quality that is, depending on, you know, where you are with your, you know, your finances. Get the best possible whatever it is for your bedroom. It'll make a difference. It really will. Light and temperature really play a big factor in quality of sleep. So the depth of getting into the delta stages of sleep, the REM stages of sleep, those stages that really have you wake up feeling like $1 million, the quality of your environment, the air, you know, open a window, get some fresh air. I mean, maybe not if you live in a city, but if you live somewhere where you can get fresh air into the bedroom, crack a window, even in the winter, even better. Makes a difference. It does.
Yeah.
I'm always cracking the window before we go to sleep. regardless, I'm from Minnesota originally.
Yeah, and so I would, even if it's like...
I would crack the windows in the winter in Minnesota because I love sleeping at a nice, you know, crisp room. But
yeah.
And I'm guessing when it comes to environment, if we're talking pillow preference, mattress preference, is it all just based on preference as to what's most comfortable for the individual? Are there other recommendations that you have?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I always tell people, get what's comfortable for you, because that's and buy what's aligned with your values. Because some, you know, some people are really concerned about, like, you know, mattresses off gassing, you know, so, okay, we'll get a more organic, natural mattress, right? If that's important to you. Some people are like, well, I just want a supportive mattress that kind of supports my back because I have back issues. Okay, we'll find a really great mattress and pillow. There's not like the perfect mattress or the perfect pillow for everyone. It's kind of like what's right for you. And that depends on what's going on for you. And do you sleep on your side? Do you sleep on your stomach? You know, like there's all these little nuances that then kind of determine, hey, what would be maybe appropriate for someone to really set themselves up for just a great night of sleep from an environmental standpoint.
1,000%. We can, as PTs, we back that statement a lot. There's no one perfect pillow, one perfect mattress out there. It really depends on the person and being able to find that comfort for them. So I love that you said that. Okay, one last question when it comes to the environment, because this is something, again, that we did for our baby. Sound machine. Does that, again, just play a role in the quality and making sure you're not hearing outside noises? Or maybe if you live in the city, is it something people shouldn't rely on? Like, what about sound machines?
Yeah, so really, I think it really depends, you know? So like, if you're in the country and you open your window and you hear the sound of crickets and it's just like natural sounds, that's a sound machine,
right? Oh, yeah.
If you live in the city and you're hearing honking horns and ambulance and all the, you know, people in the streets screaming, like, okay, get a sound machine to kind of wash that out, or like turn a fan on to kind of create more of a hum or a natural sound. But I think it really just depends. The really important thing for people to understand is there's different types of sound. You know, there's white noise and pink noise and all different types of, you know, the sounds of the nature, and sounds all have just a frequency, and certain frequencies soothe people better than others. Some people actually just prefer not to have any noise. Like they want their room as quiet as possible. So even some people sleep with earplugs. So again, it kind of comes back to personal preference, but it really does depend on your situation. And the last thing I'll say is you don't want to rely on anything in order to sleep. Like you don't want to have to feel like you have to pack your noise machine on your vacation or you won't sleep. Like that right there tells you, okay, I'm like kind of giving my power away to this noise machine, and I feel like I need to have something in order to sleep. So I would just say, just be careful about sort of relying on anything, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. So we have a lot of people in our community that are in the ages and going through the stages of menopause, whether it's perimenopause or postmenopause. And a lot of people in those times, because of different hormonal changes, can experience sleep disturbances. Do you deal with a lot of clients or members like this? And what are some, I know it's probably a pretty broad topic to cover quickly, but are there any suggestions or things that you would suggest to these people?
Yeah, it's super common. About, I think it's around 60% of women during that period experience sleep challenge, and for a lot of reasons. So this is the truth. Like, if you're going through that time, that period of life, and you're not sleeping, it's going to pass. There's some things you can do, like, you know, hot flashes. And so there's things you can do to kind of create a cooler environment in your bedroom. There's also really fun devices now and mattress pads and things that can keep you cool and kind of help you during, if you're having hot flashes in the middle of the night. There are certain supplements, one being glycine, which is naturally found in bone broth that kind of helps regulate the body temperature. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of like a period of life, just like when you just have a baby. And the baby's up and it needs to be breastfed and all the things. It's kind of just like a hard time in life. Like, you're probably not going to get much sleep as a new parent. And when you're going through menopause, you probably might not get that great of sleep during that period. The trick is to not let it carry over into after you go through that phase, because then your body's essentially, your hormones are going to find the balance, right? And there's obviously, I'm not a hormone doctor, so I'm not here to tell you to, you know, take any type of hormone supplements or anything like that. But once you get through that phase, if you're still not sleeping, then there's probably something in your behavior and your psychology that needs to shift. But just understand that that's going to pass. And it usually can be a short amount of time. If you're experiencing sleep challenge in that period, it can be a short amount of time. And it's kind of like, you know, there's not much you can do, but just say, I'm going to get through this and eventually I will sleep again. And if you're not, you're still struggling with sleep after, then again, then it's kind of something in what you're, how you're behaving or what's going on in your mind. If it's not just purely a hormonal issue, does that make sense? I hope I'm being clear about
you are
what I'm trying to express here.
You are. And I think the realization and acknowledgement of that in the first place can help to take a lot of some air out of that balloon and reduce some of that stress, knowing that it's for a period of time. It's not forever. So what can I do, you know, during the day to best support me? Because again, I love coming back to that concept that it's what you're doing throughout your day. And one last question I have that I don't know how much we touched on it, but how much does movement play a role in you being able to get back to sleep or get to sleep?
Like movement meaning like exercise or fitness or just general movement.
Or say you have a really sedentary job and you're sitting just a ton for work. Like, does that impact your sleep state as well?
Oh, 100%. 100%. And I think one of the reasons that moving your body throughout the day, getting exercise, whatever form, is so beneficial is because it's a stress reliever. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a totally letting air out of that balloon. The trick is not to exercise too hard too late, because what if you're, let's say you get out of work and it's, you get out of work kind of late, like 7 p.m. and then you're going to the gym and you're really doing some hard workout, that's going to elevate your body temperature, and your body temperature needs to drop for sleep to happen, 2 to 3 degrees Fahrenheit. And so if you elevate your body temperature too much through too hard of exercise, then it can actually negatively impact your sleep. But most people don't have that challenge. Most people just are not moving enough.
Yeah.
So even just going for a walk, you know, it's like, that's so beneficial, even if it's just down to your mailbox or whatever it is, like just moving your body at all throughout the day is going to be, have a positive impact on how well you're going to sleep at night.
Yeah.
And it kind of brings me back to what you brought up about, like, watch some documentaries on cheetahs and leopards and what are they doing? You know, yes, they lay around and they sunbathe, but they play, they run, they hunt, they're active. And if we use that as our example of some of the things that we should add into our life in order to start setting ourselves up so that sleep can come a little bit better, I think that one's going to stick with me. Like, what would a cheetah do?
Yeah, or a panda.
Yeah.
You know, or a pigeon. Right? Yeah. Like, it's really interesting. I mean, it's, animals don't have trouble sleeping, you know? They just do it. It's just, they don't think about it.
Totally.
We really don't need to think about it either. But there, what we do need to think about is, you know, how we're living our life during the day. Because that truly is what dictates how well we're going to sleep at night. It truly is.
Absolutely. No, and I think that you've given so many incredible examples of places that people can start to look in their own lives to be able to set themselves up better in this area and set themselves up for better sleep. But where can they go to learn from you more? You've mentioned your institute a couple times. Do you have any other places online? I'm sure you put out a ton more free information and also opportunities to get into some courses or memberships.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So a lot of my stuff is online completely for free on YouTube at Sleep Science Academy. And then sleepscienceacademy.com if people are interested in the work that we do. But I would say YouTube, you know, I try to put out at least a video a week on a topic that I know will resonate with someone that's struggling with their sleep. And then we have webinars and quizzes and all kinds of fun things on our website as well.
Perfect. Well, Devin, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and really dive into sleep science. This is going to be very beneficial for so many people, myself included. So I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me on. It was really nice to connect with you both.
Thanks for sticking around for another interview. Such a great discussion on sleep with Devin Burke. So if you know anybody out there who might be struggling with sleep or struggling with insomnia, please pass this episode along. And if you haven't yet, leave a rating and review on your favorite podcasting platform. We appreciate that so much because it helps this podcast get seen by so, so many more people. If you haven't yet checked out our Gen Health platform, please go check it out. We just released a whole new revamp of how the platform and how the website looks to help guide you to the content that's really going to help you overcome your pains and restrictions. There's a free week trial anytime for our membership, so you can go down to the link in the show notes and try out that free week, or just explore the platform and check out some of the free content. And of course, we will see you next time on the next episode of the Optimal Body Podcast.